Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Allison. So today, June 6th, is D-Day. On June 6, 1944, more than 150,000 American, British, Canadian, and other Allied nations troops landed on five beaches along the Normandy coastline in northern France, launching a massive invasion that was the first step, some would say, of the liberation of France and Western Europe from Nazi Germany.
De Marie-Thérèse à Marie-Louise, un ami viendra ce soir.
Sous le commandement du général Eisenhower, les forces navales alliées, avec le soutien de puissantes formations aériennes, ont commencé ce matin le débarquement des armées alliées sur les côtes nord de la France.
And this is the 80th anniversary, Sarah. France is going big on it, and we are also going big on it. We're dedicating the whole show to it.
Yeah. The commemoration started actually yesterday, but today, D-Day, started at 7:25 a.m., the time of the first landing in 1944, with a British soldier playing a bagpipe lament on a landing craft coming ashore on Gold Beach in Arromanches. Throughout the day, there'll be ceremonies with French President Emmanuel Macron welcoming Britain's King Charles and U.S. President Joe Biden, among others, in a show of unity of allied powers.
With the notable absence of the Russian President Vladimir Putin.
Yeah. Russia was invited to past commemorations to recognize the Soviet Union's contribution to fighting the Nazis, but not this year because of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The French presidency has insisted that these commemorations are not political. But it's hard to avoid politics, right, when you're looking at history, particularly at memorials. And we can really see this here with the presence of Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky in Normandy.
And D-Day comes after a string, Sarah, of World War II commemorations.
Yeah, Macron's on a roll, and it follows his commemorations of the end of World War I in 2018.
Yeah, so that was the year after Macron became France's youngest ever president.
Yeah.
He was just 39 when he came to power in 2017. So in a way, paying, you know, a lot of attention to commemorating big historical events like this has also helped him, well, try and assert himself as a statesman.
Yeah. And throughout all this also, he's pushed this idea of unity. So since the 1980s, the D-Day commemorations in particular have been political, not military, as they were before. And they've been explicitly about showing off Western unity, you know, in the 80s in the face of the Cold War. And that continues today. There is this idea of unity in the face of adversity. Macron has continued this, though he has made a point of not glossing over France's collaboration with the German occupation during World War II. Last month, at a ceremony honoring resistance fighters in the Vercors Plateau in the Alps, he said it was important to remember that those involved, French people, made choices and errors.
Car ce n'était pas seulement un temps où les Français ne s'aimaient pas. C'était aussi un temps où des Français n'aimaient pas la France.
It was not just a time when French people did not love each other. It was also a time when some French people did not love France, he said. Macron has continued to hammer away at this idea that French people can come together even after conflict. I mean, kind of an attempt to bring people together today in fractious times. Mm-hmm. Maybe, though, if you want to be more political or cynical, maybe a hope to bring people together when he himself or his government's unable to find a political majority in parliament. Of course, all this coming ahead of EU elections in France this weekend, where the far right is expected to do very well. Another contentious thing there. Macron will continue World War II commemorations through the end of the year with the liberation of Paris in August and Strasbourg in November.
So Presidents Macron and Biden may well try and steal the limelight today for D-Day, but the stars of these commemorations are undoubtedly the surviving veterans themselves, notably the men who landed on the beaches on the 6th of June, 1944.
Yeah, so it's not easy to know, right, how many soldiers died that day. Some estimates that there were 4,500 Allies killed, and of course many thousands of German soldiers.
And of course, D-Day didn't drive the Nazis out of northern France. The Battle of Normandy continued for another 3 months or so, and hundreds of thousands died or were wounded. Surviving World War II vets are a dwindling band for obvious reasons.
Right, yeah, the youngest are what, in their 90s?
Yeah, about 97. And there are quite a few centenarians, and several dozen of these men have travelled over from the US, including the unbelievably sprightly Alan Shapiro. He's 99 years old.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Going on 13. Alan was 17 on D-Day, so he was too young to actually take part in the landings. But he'd always wanted to be a fighter pilot. He trained as a fighter and glider pilot with the US Air Corps. And he came over to Europe to join the Allied forces as soon as he was 18. He flew transport carriers in the end, delivering supplies, fuel, and dropping off paratroopers. Now, he's been able to come to France with his wife thanks to a French association, Veterans Return to Normandy, in the village of Créance. It helps pay for flights, organises a programme of visiting memorial sites, but also going into schools and so on. And very importantly, it finds the vets local host families for their week-long visit. I met Shapiro at the home of Marie and Johnny Coulon.
Well, you want to see what Le Havre looked like from the air?
Yeah.
This is Le Havre. Look at all, nothing left of it.
Plus rien. 45. Ouais,
il n'y avait plus rien.
Nothing.
You Babak?
Yes.
Abbeville?
Yes.
Ah, ouais.
I flew out of Abbeville. Yeah.
D'accord.
Wow. Marie and Johnny Coulon are fascinated to see their native Normandy in a new light through the eyes of Alan Shapiro. He shows them dozens of black and white photos that he took in 1944 and 45 from up in the air on his many flying missions or on the ground with his comrades.
Let me see what else is. This was a friend. I asked him, you know, when this war is over, what is it you would like to do? And he says, I will become a priest. He was affected by the carnage that he's seen.
Alain Shapiro, 80 years after flying here in Normandy and in other parts of northern France, hosted by a lovely French family.
The second French family who has been very kind to me. The other was at the end of the European War, had just been announced. We were celebrating by going out and drinking and whatnot. And this is in Abbeville. And I'm walking down the street, I've got a bottle of Australian wine in one hand and champagne in the other, and I'm drinking them. I was becoming absolutely blasted. I spot a beautiful French girl. I come up to her, Mademoiselle, you know. And she sees that I'm really drunk. She says, come with me. Takes me to her home, to her family. Now, they had been occupied by the Germans. And I knew a little German, but didn't know French. So I said, Ich bin krank, I am sick. And the grandfather stepped forward. And he said, I would come and took care of me. They put compresses, cold compresses. They were so kind. They let me sleep there that night. They took care of me.
Shapiro composes himself and sits down in a comfy armchair. French and US flags are propped up on the mantelpiece behind him. He's wearing his original cap, the only part of his uniform that he still has. He'd always dreamed of being a fighter pilot. He never was in the end. And at 18, he knew nothing of the reality of war, like so many of his young comrades.
One of my close friends lied about his age. And he was 17 years old, but the paratroopers, I mean, United States Army paratroop, 82nd or Airborne, accepted him, trained him, and he dropped at night on Saint-Mère-Église in France. He didn't know where he was. He didn't know where anybody else was. Then it was dark. So I said, not knowing where I was, I just dug my foxhole and waited. And when dawn came, I saw I was at the base of a hedgerow He says, so I started to crawl along the ground. I get to the edge and I put my head around it. He said, and at the same time, a German soldier puts his head around the other side. I said, well, what did you do? He said, we both got up and ran. Two 17-year-old kids not ready to kill at this point.
Do you have many occasions to tell the story of what happened during the Second World War back home in the U.S.?
In the States, the people I talk to about the Second World War are normally people 70, 80 years old who did not fight in the war, but whose parents did and are interested in hearing about it. And the French were in it. That was part of their lives, but in a way that we didn't experience in the United States. So it's only an academic thing in the United States to study about the occupation and the travail of the French under the Nazi occupation. But here, you know, it's in the blood. And it shows.
What's been the reception that you have here in France?
The way that I'm accepted and even celebrated as an American survivor of the war is revelatory. I had no idea of that emotional impact. You know, I find my reception in France is overwhelmingly emotional. The love that comes from France is just beautiful.
Do you see yourself as a hero?
No, not at all. One, I was a kid when I went in. I was a kid when I came out, but I still felt I was ignorant.
For Valérie Gauthier, they are heroes. She founded the Veterans Return to Normandy Association that allowed Shapiro and many other American war vets to come over for the D-Day commemorations. The desire to help dates back to an event in 1990 when she was just 14 years old.
In that town in Créance, I met a World War II veteran lost in the middle of nowhere. And in fact, he let me know that in 1944, he has been hidden in my village with two American soldiers. And I didn't know that. And the Germans were still in the village and the French citizens helped them hide him for a couple of days. And I learned my village story by an American man. And I said, wow. And I helped him. And I continue.
So, Valérie, you've been welcoming these American veterans for, what, 10 years now?
Twelve years. Just created Veterans Back to Normandy because I saw by myself it was so difficult for them to come back, to make a trip, to organize and things. I said, it's our turn to give the hand and help them to come back, because if we are free, if we are who we are right now, we owe him to them. So it's my gratitude to them and with the host family, the members of Veterans Back to Normandy Association, you know, and the citizens, the students we may have and see every day, the transmission between the generation, that is something we had to do. It's very important for everyone, for them and for us. And we made the relationship, you know, with the relative of those family who passed away now. And the next year, the World War II veteran come back. We found out the World War II veteran, and he has been like a wheel, you know, you can't stop.
But the wheel will inevitably stop turning at some point. The veterans will be no more.
For the moment, we enjoy the moment all together, and that is so precious. Time will come one day, yeah. But we are not ready, and we will never be ready for that.
Alan Shapiro is in no mood to envisage an end to any of this anytime soon. But with war returning to Europe in Ukraine and far-right populist parties making ground in Europe and elsewhere, I wondered what, if anything, his experience of war had taught him.
Two things came out of the war for me and my experience. One is that I just felt that I was part of a major army of good. British, French, American, all the Allies. And we were one. And what I see today at home is that we are not one. We don't all feel that way. But I think in France, the people there do feel that same way.
But the message that there must never again be a war, is that something you feel strongly about?
I will admit to you that when I heard about the Russian invasion of Ukraine, I was ready to jump into an airplane again and fight. I do not stand for any hate. I do not stand for any subjection of other people. And that came out of the war. I am a fighter now. And I don't mind saying that. So maybe I have found my fighter plane finally. And I can thank the French people for part of that. Merci.
So it's interesting there that Alan talks about the difference between how the French and the Americans experienced the war, like French people actually lived through it. Americans kind of saw it from afar, except for those who landed, but, you know, not that many. But it turned out that's affected, of course, the way each country looks back on the Normandy invasion now. Jess Phelan has been interested in that question and joins us now. Hi, Jess.
Hi, Sarah. Hi, Alison.
Hi there.
Yeah, so I wanted to find out which stories get told about D-Day in France and the US and whose stories get told. So I asked Mary Louise Roberts, a professor of history at the University of Wisconsin, for the American perspective on D-Day.
I think the French are just erased.
So Roberts is an expert in French history. She tries to correct that with her own students. And she told me that she shows them Saving Private Ryan as the classic all-American version of D-Day.
Oh, right, right. That Spielberg movie, the U.S. soldiers land in Normandy. Mm-hmm. They go looking for the private to bring mm-hmm. him home safely.
Right. And I don't know if you remember, but you only really see French people in one scene where this family is in a bombed-out building and they're panicking. They hand over their small child to the American soldiers who are heading out into, you know, further battle zones, which obviously, I mean, why would anyone do that?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Robert says that she shows that scene to her students and they always laugh because it's so absurd.
That just makes the French look ridiculous. It really does. And I think there's a widespread anti-French belief in the United States that there was a lot of collaboration in France and that the French are just the background in which American heroism became clear. I mean, most Americans don't know that the Battle of Stalingrad was the real turning point of the war. They literally think that D-Day was the turning point of the war, and that's just wrong.
So Roberts has written a book called D-Day Through French Eyes, where she says the starting idea was to turn the camera around and show what the landings looked like for people in northern France. So let's try and do that ourselves.
Les avions passaient sans arrêt et on commençait à entendre des bombardements dans les terres.
So this is Henri, who was 19 years old in June 1944, and he spent the night before the invasion in a dormitory next to a beach in central Normandy because the German military had drafted him and other local civilians to build reinforcements along the coast. And that night, planes were flying overhead nonstop, he says. They heard them dropping bombs inland. Then around 4 a.m., they looked outside and saw hundreds of boats on the sea. And on the horizon, they could see that fighting had started, and they said to themselves, this is it, the Allied landing. And he says they were happy to see it, but also afraid of what was coming.
And those mixed feelings that he's describing, how typical were they?
Well, for context, the people of Normandy had been living alongside Nazi soldiers for around 4 years by June 1944. They'd suffered a lot, and it really got worse in the months leading up to D-Day as the Germans began preparing for a possible invasion. They requisitioned locals like Henri for forced labour. They seized farmland. They flooded it to make it harder for paratroopers to land. They arrested anyone that they thought worked for the resistance. They even made people hand over their radio sets to stop them listening to the BBC.
Wow, like life under occupation. People must have really been looking forward to being free of it.
Absolutely. But they also knew what that would take, that wherever the Allies landed would become a battleground. It started with the planes that Henri heard going overhead. They were heading to bomb the main roads in Normandy because the Allies wanted to stop the Germans moving troops to the beaches and pushing back the invasion. Now, all these roads passed through towns and cities and villages, and the Allies essentially decided to sacrifice them. Around 15 towns were hit the night before D-Day and in the days after, including ones that didn't have any military targets to speak of. Thousands of civilians were killed on D-Day and in the 3 months that followed in those bombings. We think it was around 20,000 in all. Henri lost his fiancée and his uncle, and here he is speaking about it years later.
Tout le monde en voulait un petit peu aux Américains quand même. Tous les civils ont été tués par les Américains en fin de compte.
Et so everyone was a bit angry at the Americans, he says, because most of the civilians who died were killed by the Allied bombings. And he doesn't understand why. Why bomb a town like Caen, where there weren't even many German troops? He says people asked themselves that at the time, and he still wonders it now.
So that's not exactly the sort of typical version of the Normandy landings that we get, where you imagine all these grateful French people cheering on the American and Allied soldiers.
Right. And I spoke to French historian Emmanuel Thiebaud about this. He's the director of the Falaise Memorial in Normandy, a museum that's dedicated to the experiences of civilians during World War II.
Beaucoup, on le voit, de soldats alliés.
Lots of Allied soldiers said, "You promised us the French would welcome us with open arms, but it seems like the people of Normandy aren't very welcoming. They keep their distance. It's like they're angry with us." Sure, but if you've lost everything and maybe had loved ones wounded or killed, you're not going to jump for joy and start dancing in the streets. You see pretty pictures like that, but usually in towns that weren't badly damaged.
In Britain and, I guess, the US too, we don't often talk about that aftermath, do we, Jess?
Right. But after D-Day, there was an exodus of people from Normandy. Somewhere between 150,000 and 200,000 people fled over the summer of 44. And when they returned, many of them spent years living in temporary housing, in wooden huts, essentially. It took around 20 years after that to rebuild Normandy after the war.
That's a long time. Mm-hmm. And did people talk about it much in France then?
Well, this is the really interesting thing. They didn't. So Henri says he didn't speak about it for years, even with his own family.
Tant d'années après, on ressent encore, comme si c'était hier. Quand j'en parle, je revois tous ces cadavres, je revois tous ces... C'est là. C'est dur.
So you can hear from his voice there how difficult it is. He was speaking to RFI in 2019, so 75 years later, and he said it still felt like yesterday when he talked about it. He still saw the bodies. But this wasn't just a question of individual trauma. Here's historian Emmanuel Thiebaud again.
Il faut rappeler aussi que les premières commémorations...
You also have to remember that the first D-Day commemorations were taking place in the context of the Cold War.
L'allié, c'est l'OTAN.
The enemy then had become the Soviet bloc, while the ally was NATO, primarily the Americans and the British.
On voulait plutôt mettre en avant.
The remembrance ceremonies mainly sought to foreground the heroism of these warriors who saved Europe from the Nazis, rather than reminding people that the liberation of Europe came with civilian losses.
De pertes chez les populations civiles.
So Thiebaud says that the civilians who died were commemorated locally in France, in towns across Normandy, but not at a national level and certainly not internationally. And Mary Louise Roberts, the American historian, says that's still the case in the US today.
Since the Second World War, the United States has engaged in several ambiguous wars in which the lines of good and evil were much less clear. And that's, of course, why World War II becomes the greatest subject of movies, right? But I think that the American inability to really come to terms with the war and what happened, and that it was morally ambiguous in some ways as well, is something a large majority are not willing to do.
But in France, that has been changing. For the 50th anniversary of the landings, there was a big drive to collect eyewitness accounts, including from people like Henri. He says he felt like he had a duty to finally talk about it for younger generations. And in 2014, the French president at the time, François Hollande, dedicated his D-Day speech to the people of Normandy. And that was the first time that civilians had been acknowledged at France's official remembrance ceremony. And 2 years after that, the Falaise Memorial opened. It's the only museum in France and one of very few in Europe that focuses on what civilians went through during the war.
À travers l'exemple passé que l'on raconte ici dans le musée.
Through the example of the past that we describe here in the museum, the idea is to show what war does to civilian populations, even today.
La guerre est le premier grand conflit de l'histoire.
World War II was the first in history where, by the end, more civilians had died than soldiers. Sadly, this is the pattern we would go on to see in every conflict that followed.
Les conflits post-Seconde Guerre mondiale.
Emmanuel Thiebaud, director of the Falaise Memorial in Normandy. You also heard from historian Mary-Louise Roberts and Henri Almar, who lived through D-Day. He spoke to RFI's Raphaël Constant in 2019.
Oh, my friends, what a day, what a day. Welcome to France, welcome to Colville.
That's most kind of you. Very nice to meet you.
Thank you, boys, thank you. Vive la France! Vive la France! Vive les Alliés!
That's it for Spotlight on France this week. This episode was mixed by Cécile Pompiani.
We'd love to hear from you. If you have questions about the show, about France, or even just to say hello, write to us. We're at spotlight.france@rfi.fr.
We're a production of the English service of Radio France International. If you like the show, please consider rating or even reviewing us. It helps to push the podcast out there. You can do that on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen.
Yeah, and make sure to subscribe. You can find us on Instagram at Spotlight on France. We'll be back in 2 weeks on Thursday, June 18th. Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Puis un jour, en agitant son mouchoir, pour la France, il embarque à plein d'espoir. Lily, bye bye, bye bye.